And welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have fantastic director. I think it's his first film, but I could be wrong. 420 Massacre, Dylan Reynolds. Thank you for coming to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we finally had a little bit of problem getting a hold of each other, but we got here finally. That's great.
Yeah, I had you had to teach me Skype over email. So, but this is my first Skype experience, so this is interesting.
It's all good, man. All good. So, 420 Massacre. It's got a strange name. It's the first thing I want to discuss.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Why the name?
Do you know the reference to 420 and marijuana and all that stuff?
No.
Okay, well, I guess we could start with that. So 420 is April 20th has become known as a marijuana holiday. So it's a day for people to all get high. They have different theories and stories about where it came from. I think the one most commonly accepted is some Grateful Dead fans in the 70s used to meet at 420 at a high school in order to smoke weed. And apparently that got spread around. So then 420, for whatever reason, got identified as a marijuana subculture.
Oh, well, there you go. See, you taught me something already. That's great.
So basically the general idea with 420 Massacre then is treating it, it's like a holiday, so it's a holiday slasher film like Friday the 13th, but with weed. So that's the main pitch of it.
Well, you're the first one I've ever heard to do this concept, just so you know. I watch a lot of films, so that's good to hear. You got something different. You take a while to show your title shot. Because I do have notes saying the title shot comes in late. Was there a reason for that?
I think it's like 5 minutes in. I mean, in general, I try to make the film like not an ironic throwback to like late 70s, early 80s horror films where you would kind of have that like the opening intro and then you get hit with the title after your opening kill kind of thing.
You seem to have a beautiful park to film in. You seem to roam a lot around in it. So where's the park?
We shot the film in 10 days in a little town outside of Big Bear. And what we did is we shot at a sleepaway camp, that they use for church retreats and summer camps and stuff like that. So we basically ran out a few cabins and would go out and shoot during the day and come back at night and talk about the scenes the next day. So it was like, I described it as, it was like going out and playing pretend with a group of friends and going camping for a week and making a movie.
Because your movie, I want to discuss off the beginning. I hope I'm not ruining anything. It seemed to be like two different films at one point. It seemed like a 5 minute short before the title credit. And then the actual movie starts right after the title credit. Even though they do combine later. But it takes us a while to get there.
I guess, we have our opening scene introducing the two guys and setting up the concept of, as far as this marijuana grower, farmer, is a slasher. So then one of the guys gets away, and we're introduced to our five leads. And then we get introduced to Ranger Rick, who's the local ranger kind of warning them, the old man telling them to stay out of the hills sort of thing. And then they meet up with the guy from the opening who hands them off our MacGuffin, which is the backpack full of weed. And then they become marked, so to speak, by the killer.
You are correct. I agree with everything you've told me. I really enjoyed the banter between the women. I thought you shot that well.
Okay.
I thought it worked. I mean, it Thank seemed you. To me, it may not even some have been written. It could have been ad-libbed because it seemed to flow really well all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Thank you. Yeah, obviously it was written and we did rehearsals, but I kind of like to shoot. I call it ad-libbing between the lines, so I like to shoot it kind of loose and then just encourage people to throw out ideas or find new things within the written text. And then basically I just encourage them to give me options, so then when I go into editing, I just have something new to pull from. I just kind of cherry-pick it and kind of mold it from there and, find the, I guess what you call it, you find like the mistakes, but they become those human moments, and I think that helps make it seem natural.
I thought all your five leads felt very natural to me.
Like they seemed no, they're all great. I mean, that's the other thing is you cast good actors who can who bring a lot of ideas to the table and can be creative. And basically, you know, my method as a director, you know, everyone's got their own thing, but I figured just cast good people and you just let them do their jobs and let them be creative and you just kind of, you know, let the magic happen, so to speak. So rather than, you know, step here, say this exactly like this. And, you know, that's, I mean, that can work like the Stanley Kubrick thing. I can do 63 takes until I get exactly how I want in my head. Or, you know, I think with a low budget thing, you don't have that ability. So you, instead, I try to embrace the chaos, so to speak.
So where did you find your lead actors? Did you do a lot of auditions or they just sort of given to you or how does that work?
It was a kind of a mixed bag. The star was Jamie Bernadette, and she's done a lot of genre films, kind of like known as a scream queen. And I met her at some screenings and the AFM and stuff, and I talked to her about being in the film. So she's one I approached, and then my wife plays Aubrey in the film, Vanessa Rose Parker. She's the, you know, spoilers, she gets her head sawed off at one point, so and professes her love to the girl. Then Stacey Danger, who played the stoner character, was worked for my wife and was a mutual friend. She came in for early reading. I really liked her take on the character. And then Justine Washberger and Marissa Pistone, we basically found during the audition process. You know, we called people in and did readings and that kind of stuff. And the Ranger, Jim Storm, who's like a veteran actor. He was in my first movie, Chainlink, and so I basically wrote that character with him in mind.
I thought he was great. He absolutely suited that character to a T, and Stacey also suited her character to a T. Like, I thought Stacey had it down perfect.
No, she was great, and, you know, our whole approach to the stoner character thing was not doing something where they're a complete loser or whatever, but I mean, there's that comic relief aspect, but we really tried to make it like as someone that would be a little more believable, I guess, or not your standard, stupid stoner character.
So I have to ask, was your wife upset when you cut off her head?
No, it was fun. It was a good dramatic scene, you know, so it was, you know, actors love that stuff. You know, they love, digging into those like kind of crazy moments, you know, and they pretend basically and imagine what that's like. So, you know, I think the truth is, I think a lot of people say when you make a horror movie, it's actually a lot of fun. It's, it's not as serious as when you cut it together and what you actually portray, but when you're doing it, it's all fun.
Well, I'm just worried about you wake up one morning, she's mad at you and she's just cut that scene over and over and over again on you. Now you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. You never know.
Your music when Ranger Rick leaves, it has a very strange sound to it.
When Ranger Rick leaves, you mean when he drives away from the girls?
Yes.
I mean, the soundtrack in general. Well, you're either talking about the soundtrack or you're talking about...
the soundtrack. School. Well, I don't know. I just wrote down strange music plays.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, in the sound mix, we had a song playing from his radio.
No, it wouldn't have been that. It must have been when he leaves. It would have probably been the soundtrack,
score was done by Angela Defoe, and I really liked her work in it. I know it was different, and what we tried to go for with that is she used to be a neighbor of mine, and she used to do this experimental kind of music where it would take different random instruments they wouldn't normally pair together and kind of create this kind of beautifully weird and melodic kind of music. And when I was doing the movie, it kind of reminded me of Italian horror movies like Dario Argento and Goblin and like that kind of weird soundscape stuff. So, I picked her tapped her to do this movie because I thought she could provide that kind of unique late 70s, early 80s kind of score I was trying to go for.
Now, is this film supposed to take place in the 80s?
No, what I did with that is I tried to make it so it wasn't any specific time period. Some people point out, like, yeah, you don't have any cell phones in the movie. And it was just one of those things. It's an early decision I made where I hate those scenes and I don't want to write those scenes. Oh, my cell reception isn't working. So I just figured, this takes place in a slasher movie universe where, you know, cell phones don't exist. And we're just going to embrace that. This is where we're at. This is the story we're telling, and not get caught up in period stuff. And also doing that whole throwback feel. Obviously, it's modern, but we did with certain choices as far as props and stuff. We try to give it that like it's a throwback '80s kind of
thing. Yeah, because you have like that '80s tape recorder. I wrote it right down in big notes. '80s tape recorder. I'm like, okay. So who had that lying around?
I got it from my boss's. He had it like laying in his garage, and it was one of those things that I had because I know I was doing the montage thing, and I wanted to do like source music, and you know, it was just a cool throwback visual kind of thing. And I figured, well, you know, she's a hipster, and hipsters, you know, won't play old technology or whatever. So that's what we did.
Okay, I don't know if I'm allowed to say what I want to say, but you have a certain creature. That uses a knife, and I always thought that was strange. And he used why didn't he use a knife or something?
Well, we're going into spoilers territory.
I'm trying to be very gentle here. I was good. I said creature. I'm not going to say anything else.
I guess let's just say it's revealed why he uses a knife at the end once it's revealed what this thing is.
I'm not going to say any more. We're going to be quiet. I said I got to discuss it a bit. That's what I said. I'm going to have to be. I'll dive around in a bit. Sure. I thought the music was never overpowering. I did enjoy that. Like I thought you let the music, the actors and the script speak for itself, as opposed to drowning it out, which I do see a lot in things.
Oh, interesting. I thought, you know, there was times, because it's a dramatic score, so there was times I was debating whether it was too much or whatever. So
I didn't think so. I definitely wrote down it's never overpowering.
Okay, cool.
So I thought that's good. Like I said, I thought your cast was so strong that you wanted them to be the movie as opposed to the music setting the tone. They were setting the tone. Like banter was so good. The conversation was so good that you didn't need the music to tell me anything.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying that. And yeah, our whole goal with the movie was I describe it as it's an indie drama, and then slasher shows up. So we, you know, the whole challenge with writing a slasher movie script is like, can you write one where you actually care about the characters before they die? And that was that's what we did. So that's why we spend more, you know. Some horror movie fans don't appreciate it. I think some do, but we try to spend more time with characters and character development, and you know, try and create relationships and connections between the characters before we massacred them.
Yeah, because I wrote notes like five distinct looking people, as opposed to a lot of films and slasher films. All the teens look the same. It doesn't matter who dies because they're all the same to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought you had a very distinct look for each one. Was that your plan?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think what we did is, like, each character kind of fills, even though they're cast as all women, which is also one choice I made, but they all kind of fulfill that slasher trope. So there's the stoner character, there's the final girl, there's the, you know, there's the tough jock, you know, asshole kind of character, there's the princess, you know, sex pod kind of character, but within those you know, within those tropes, I try to create real people out of that.
Well, I think you did. Like I said, I wrote down you spent a lot of time in the girls' relationship. I really felt these characters existed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, I did feel them getting killed off. I mean, obviously, I knew they were going to. That's the name of the movie. You know, you're going to go. But, like, again, I want to say I think you did your job well in the writing.
So, cool. Appreciate it, man.
That's a positive for you. I thought it was weird that Ranger Rick has a crossbow, not a gun.
I think you froze up a little bit right there. What was the last?
I'm sorry. Ranger Rick doesn't carry a gun.
Ranger Rick doesn't carry a gun. Yeah, he does a crossbow instead.
Yeah, which I thought was strange for Ranger Rick.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things. It was a choice because I think even originally at the scripting stage, it was probably a shotgun or something. But I was like, crossbows are kind of cool, you know, Walking Dead or whatever, you know.
No, it's all good.
It would be good.
Yeah, something I want to ask you, I can't because that's going to be a spoiler. I'm just trying to read my notes here. I knew who the last survivor is going to be. I think you pretty much stated that early.
Right. Well, definitely, as I said, like the characters kind of fulfilled those genre tropes at the end of the day.
So that was definitely your attempt to have them fulfill that genre trope?
Yeah. That definitely the final girl was set up to be the final girl and the stoner, et cetera. But I think it was more, what we did was try to do it in the execution. You know, those are what those characters are, but we didn't try to make it, the cookie cutter kind of.
No, you definitely did not. I'm fully going to give you that. I guess my next question, what are your plan for the film is? Are you sending it to film festivals? Or are you putting it on VOD?
It's out right now. People can watch it on Amazon for rental, and they can buy the DVD on Amazon as well.
Oh, so it's on DVD too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
great.
It's out there. And this upcoming Friday is April 20th, so we're going to have a screening out here in LA, of course. Have a party, and the band that they hear at the campsite the whole time, Sleeping Wolf, is going to perform afterwards, and it should be a good time. So if you're out in LA, it's at the California Institute of Abnormal Arts in North Hollywood.
I like the name of the theater.
It's a cool spot. It's like an old punk rock venue, and it looks like an opium den meets a circus sideshow. It's the best I can describe the way they design it. But anyway, so it should be a cool place for a movie premiere. And other than that, the movie's out there. It's going to be available at Family Video. It's on some VOD sites. It'll probably be on iTunes in May. So, we'll roll it out there and people can check it out.
Good. Are you ready to play fun questions? Because I know you haven't heard one of my interviews, so that's good. Your favorite film?
My favorite film. My always go-to answer, I guess, is Monster Squad. Even though that feels kind of cliche now, because I feel like the movie's kind of had a resurgence of popularity. But at one point, it was almost like a secret handshake. Like said, "Oh, this movie, Monster Squad," and people, the real movie nerds would know what you're talking about. So I still go with Monster Squad. Probably is my go-to answer. But I watch so many movies and. What I like and what my favorite is, like, sways, from month to month, probably, so.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm upset with,
Well, you're kind of giving your age away on Monster Squad, because that thing was kind of in and out for our age group.
Yeah, I'm definitely born in 1980, so.
I'm way older, dude. I remember Monster Squad in theaters.
Right. I grew up in all the George Lucas, Steven Spielberg stuff, and then when the Sundance indies kind of came around, so. Probably, I can't imagine there's not a filmmaker of my generation that has been influenced by Tarantino and Kevin Smith and Robert Rodriguez or Richard Linklater. So, anything those guys have done is probably, stuff that's inspired me.
Awesome. Okay, it's Friday night. There are people at your house. What do you put on to watch?
Friday night? What was I going to watch? I was thinking of watching that Seven Planets movie that's on Amazon right now. What's the Luc Besson movie? It's supposed to be bad.
Oh, yes, I've seen it. Oh, my God. Valerian and the Thousand Planets.
Yeah. So, I did get to see it in theaters, but I'm debating whether to put that on right now. What else? Oh, I need to see that. Maybe I should watch that on Amazon. That's supposed to be good. That The Brawl and Cell Block something with the... But what do you recommend I see?
We'll talk after air. I'll have to think about it for a couple of minutes, but I'll give you something to watch. You got to let me think. Third question. I'm staring at your DVD shelf. What DVD would stand out that shouldn't be there?
That wouldn't fit? I'm married, so literally I'm looking over at the stuff I have on my DVD shelf right now, and I have the Friday 13th collection out because it was Friday 13th. So, you know, I revisited a couple of Jason movies. And then my wife has Pitch Perfect 3 and Zootopia next to it. So I think that pretty much.
I could give you Zootopia. I enjoy Zootopia. But Pitch yeah. Perfect 3, no.
She likes the Pitch Perfect, man. So I don't tell you. I had to see the two sequels in theaters. So,
so did I. My daughter made me go. I took her to both.
It's funny because, you know, we share the Netflix thing. So the Netflix will literally say, you know, strong female drama with a female lead is, you know, one suggestion. It's like gory, violent 80s action thriller, like on the second thing. So it's, you know, it's kind of funny to see that.
Okay, your last question. It's really easy. You're at the movie theater. What do you order?
The movie theater, you know, I just, you know, I get my large Diet Coke. I don't do the snacks and stuff. I just get my big ass soda and get in my seat and watch a movie.
Well, I want everybody to go see your film. It's fun. 420 Massacre.
Cool, and, appreciate it. Yeah.
Go see it. It's on VOD. You can buy the DVD and you can see it in LA this week. So
yep,
thank you for your
right.
time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye. Hey, thank you for listening. Could you please give us an iTunes review? And also, if you'd like to donate, please do so at our homepage.